Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. What's up, everybody? If you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This episode number 116. In this episode, I interview Walter from Doobie's House. He has been gardening for 12 years and grows a variety of plants such as squash, tomatoes, cucumbers, strawberries, broccoli, medicinal varieties, and so much more. He also has worked in several commercial facilities. In this episode, he talks about keeping things efficient when growing multiple plants at the same time. If you want to see highlights of these podcast episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. That channel is dedicated to short, bite-sized clips of these episodes. I did a poll on my YouTube channel, the channel that this podcast is posted on, and I asked how many people are aware that I have another channel. 53% of the people said that they weren't aware that I had another channel. Well, I have another channel, and I've been uploading for the past 7 years. There's actually 130-plus videos on that channel, where it shows the plants that I grow. I'll have that channel linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to AC Infinity for sponsoring this episode. Their Grow 10 kits are incredible. You get their Ion Board LED grow light, their Grow Tent, which is currently the thickest on the market, their ventilation system, clip-on fan, and their Controller 69 to control it all. You also get their fabric pots, trellis net, plant ties, and trimmers. Definitely a good price for all that you get in the kit. I'll have a link in the description section below so you can learn more about these Grow 10 kits, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. I've been using Stash Blend for over a year now, and it's awesome. One of the things that I really like is that it saves me money. It's a whole bunch of different inputs in one, so I no longer have to go out there and buy a silica bottle, then a separate seaweed bottle, beneficial bacteria, then a separate one for mycorrhizal fungi. All of that plus more is in this one blend. Go to stashblend.com to learn more about it, and I also have a link down in the YouTube description section below. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today I am joined with Walter Jones from Doobie's House. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. So you reached out to me on Instagram, I think it was several years ago now, man, and you were like, oh, I'd be willing to come on the podcast. And to be completely honest with you, the list of potential guests for this podcast is over 200, you know? So at the time I wasn't able to do it. Finally, I was able to get you on here, and I'm really happy I'm able to get you on here. I'm excited about today's conversation because of your background, your experience. You have experience in commercial facilities. You have experience in larger operations, experience home growing as well. Not just medicinal plants, but vegetables as well. And I think you're going to be able to bring a lot of value to today's conversation because it has to do with kind of making things more efficient in the garden. And when you're working in a commercial operation, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I know every commercial operation is kind of different, right? But efficiency is kind of a big point. You know, they don't want to just pay workers for standing around. They want processes to be done in an efficient manner and reduce the labor hours, the labor costs that they spend. So there are a lot of tips, a lot of various things that they do in commercial facilities that I think save time. And also a lot of that stuff can be translated to the home grower as well. And a lot of the audience is home growers here. I do have quite a few folks actually work commercial facilities, outdoor, all aspects. But for the most part, let's talk efficiency in the garden. And let's get into the introduction. Then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of this. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into gardening.
My name is Walter Jones. I've been doing some gardening for about 12 years now, a little consultant on the side. But before we get started, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. It's a blessing to be here. I want to thank you for all the hard work you've done over the past 6 years. You've created this awesome platform here. Shout out to all your viewers and your subscribers. And I'm just happy to be here, man. I got into gardening maybe about back in 2011. My best friend came to me and told me he was having a hard time finding pops some medicine. At the time, his pops was dealing with some glaucoma, and he needed to consume just about every day to be able to function normally. And of course, I was like, I can help him out, try to find him some stuff. And once I started doing that, you know, me and him really got to know each other a little more, even though I already knew him. You know, I would sit down with him for maybe half an hour, and then half an hour turned into an hour, then 2 hours. You know, we actually started hanging out almost, you know, 3-4 times a week. And one day he was like, yeah, man, I just want to kind of show me that how the glaucoma kind of affects him. And he was like, you know, it's not really painful or anything, but it's just like, you know, you get pressure like in the eye, like some valve or like attached to the retina. It kind of just builds up pressure and it just causes him not to be able to see. And sometimes it just made him cry a lot as well, just for no reason, like just crying. And one day he consumed in front of me, and he showed me that, you know, once he consumed, like all that really came to a halt. And that was the first time that I've actually seen the power of the plant. And it was pretty remarkable. And not long after that, he asked me about helping him do a garden in the backyard. And of course, I was like, yes. And he gave me a book. I don't really remember the name of the book, but I know in the book, you know, it told us everything about gardening, from summer crops to cold weather crops, how to use the rototiller to dig your plot, build the bed, the raised bed, build your soil, compost teas. It was just everything in there. And yeah, we set out, you know, we set everything up, did everything that summer. It was probably like 2011 we did that. And we got some really nice fruits and vegetables when the season was over. And the next year, I'm up here in Massachusetts, so the next year was 2012, and then they actually passed medical here. So I just had an idea, like maybe we should put some plants in the yard. And, like, I wasn't really trying to like watch his pockets, but you know, I realized that he was spending, you know, a significant amount of money, you know, to get his medicine. And I just thought, you know, it'd be a great idea if we can just do it ourselves. And when I asked him about it, I mean, he lit up like a Christmas tree, and he was like so excited that, you know, I was interested in maybe doing that. And then he looked at me for like maybe 2 minutes, just not saying anything. And he was like, you know what? You know, we cannot tell my wife about this. And I was like, hey, no problem, man. And then, you know, I knew a guy who was actually already kind of doing it at home. So I went by to check out what he was doing. He was actually growing organically. And he was telling me, like, he had everything already in the soil. So he was just feeding actually just plain water through this whole cycle. And when he said that, it just kind of dawned on me, like, you know, we just built our own soil for gardening and vegetables. I mean, maybe I can just do the same thing, you know. And he actually gave me my first two, you know, set of seeds. It was some Cali Kush. And that's what I did. You know, I used some of the garden soil and we put the seeds in there. And everything was going real smooth. And then all of a sudden, you know, we ran into like the malnutrition and like deficiencies kicked in. And at the time, we didn't really know what any of that was. We were just like, we don't know what's going on. So we just started doing some research. Everyone was saying, you know, you got to go to your local grow store and, you know, get some stuff there. So I looked it up. The closest store to me was in Rhode Island. So that was about, you know, 35 minutes away. But you know what? I still went. And when I went down there, I mean, the store was phenomenal. I've never seen a store like that before. So I was kind of like, wow. And I actually found myself going down there multiple times a week, sometimes not even buying anything. I just wanted to go there and just pick the brain of people who work there. And when I was there the first time, I noticed that some of the nutrients on the shelves was some of the stuff that we had in the garage already. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to go back to the garage and, you know, mix some stuff up. So I'm in the garage with a, you know, 5-gallon bucket, and I'm throwing bone meal, I'm throwing blood meal in there, and I'm kelp, alfalfa. I had a little bottle of, like, seedweed juice. I'm squirting that in there. And I just stir it up, mix it up, and then I just throw it on the plants. And I'm just like, all right, I think we're going to be in good shape now. And, man, I'm telling you, like, maybe 2-3 days later, those plants looked like fried chicken. They were so burnt up. I didn't know what was going on. We were like, did the sun do this? Did we got some pest or something attacking it? Like, we didn't have no idea what was going on. So I'm back at the grow store asking the guys, you know, plants look a little weird now. And then they're like, well, did you pH it? Did you get your EC right? And I'm like, I don't know what any of that means, dude. You know, and then they're like, yeah, you gotta make sure you're doing the proper feedings and stuff. And I'm like, ah, okay. So we eventually fixed all that, but the end result was not great. We were kind of bummed out, and I was kind of like, you know, I think I might want to try to do this, you know, year round. And he was like, you know, it's not a bad idea. You know, I could help you invest in getting something. And so I went back to the store and I actually picked up It was the Hydro Farm light fixture. I picked up two CFLs, one for veg, one for bloom. You know, took it home, put it in the closet. You know, I put the aluminum foil all around the closet to get some reflection going. Made it real nice. And then, I just started growing right in the closet at home. And then I was really looking at some videos on YouTube. People were saying, you know, more light's better. So, you know, I went back to the store, picked up some 4 foot T5s, put those in there. And then I don't know if you remember this light, but there was a light back then. It was called the Kessel. Kind of looked like a bigger version of the flashlight. It was like one of the first LEDs they really marketed in the grow magazines. So I picked up one of those, and I had all different type of light spectrums going. And that's pretty much how I got started, you know, from the closet. You know, I felt like it wasn't big enough. Ended up copping a 4x4 and all the extras that come with it. And I've kind of just been doing it ever since.
Man, that's awesome. That's really, really cool. So you started out with the vegetables. I mean, before we started recording, you listed off a dozen vegetables that you've been growing over the years. Then you went to a closet grow. Now you went into commercial facilities too, right? I think you mentioned to me behind the scenes that there's a couple different operations. I'm looking at your Instagram. I see a greenhouse and then I see an indoor operation. How'd you get into that?
I'm up here in Massachusetts, so around 2015, you know, they really started to try to open these places up. And I really wanted to get a job doing it because I was doing it at home. You know, people were saying that, you know, I was doing a good job. You know, I didn't know if I was doing a good job, but they said I was doing a good job. You know, I always kept a portfolio, and I just kept going over to the dispensary. And I was like, no, can I get a job? Can I get a job? And they were like, well, the guy to talk to was never there. And then one day he was finally there, and I showed him my portfolio. He's like, oh, you're the one that's been coming around here for a job, huh? And I was like, yeah. He said, well, your pictures look nice, so I think I'm going to hire you. And I was like, oh, nice. You know, so that was actually my first gig back in 2015. And then the greenhouse work, that came later on. That's actually down in Oklahoma. I got some family down there. Around 2018, my brother called me. He was like, you know, I think Oklahoma's about to get the green light down here. So he wanted to learn. So I was trying to teach him like over Skype, over video. You know, he called me every day. I sent him some seeds, try to get him going, try to show him the ropes. And eventually, he took what he learned from me. He showed his business partner, and then they got more partners, and they ended up opening quite a few things down there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I've heard Oklahoma is pretty crazy. There's a lot. It's more freedom than some of the other states out there.
It's pretty wild west down there. Pretty wild west. But right now, I hear they're trying to clean it up a little bit right now. So that's a good thing, to be honest.
Yeah. And then kind of to bring it to where you are now, you had mentioned behind the scenes that you're doing consulting now. So you've kind of stepped away from the commercial facilities, still doing the home grow and stuff like that, but you're doing consulting. How does that working out for you?
It's been working out pretty good. You know, a lot of people, I started this back in maybe 2016. Before I had Doobie South, I actually called myself Natural Remedy because back in 2012, when I was doing the closet growing stuff, I actually, his name's Clarence. Clarence actually became I became Clarence's caregiver. You know, we got all licensed and approved for it. So I became his caregiver. So I was doing everything for him mainly. And later on down like 2015, working in dispensaries, and then like it just dawned on me that I wanted to do something more, like on my own. So there was a lot of people at the time that wanted to learn how to do this because it was so new around here. Everybody wanted to try to get their hands in on the industry. So I figured, you know, I could start doing this, helping people out, start them off slow, show them how to do it from beginning to end, and it worked out pretty well. And a lot of people really wanted to get into it, so I was willing to help them out.
Awesome. So I imagine you have clients that are kind of looking to get the information that you're about to speak today, which is making things more efficient, growing a large number of plants and being efficient with it. And let's transition to that right now. And I think I want to start with the beginning, really, germinating, planting seeds, and cutting clones, right? How do you go about those things in an efficient manner?
I usually like to start my seeds either in the solo cup or the paper towel method. And you know, I let those sit in the cup until, you know, the tap root pops out. Paper towel method, anywhere between 48, 72 hours, you might get the tap root popping out. And then shortly after that, I kind of just transitioned that into maybe a 4-inch pot. And that's going to be its home for several weeks. I mean, I don't really move it out of that pot until I get a really good root structure built. Maybe the plant get like 6 to 7 inches tall. But before I even talk about the plants getting tall, like the way you go about it, the way I go about it is like before I even plant the seed, I like to put the soil in. I like to use like a mister. I don't really go heavy with the water, and I like to mist the top of the soil, you know, poke your hole, you know, put the tap root down. Actually put plastic bags over the cup or over the pot just to keep the humidity up, because you know you need to get the seed to like at least 90% humidity to get the seed to break the seed coat. So that's what I do with that, and then I usually let it stay in that pot for at least probably three and a half weeks, maybe 4 weeks before I transplant to the final pot. My final pots are usually either a 1 gallon or a 2 gallon. I just like those more because like more control of your watering. It's kind of like easier not to overwater your plants with a smaller pot. I know a lot of people have trouble starting off because they usually, you know, water too much. And so I think small pots are the way to go for when you start off.
Got it. Now, you mentioned the paper towel method, and I want to talk about that for a minute. I used to use the paper towel method quite a bit, and very common method. I mean, that's one of the first things you learn is to soak the seeds in the paper towel. Then once you see it cracked open, you plant it from there. There's a lot of people who just go straight into the soil and they say, hey, more efficient, easier, skip the paper towel method, just go right into soil. Now, when you're growing hundreds of plants at once, germinating hundreds of seeds at once, it's more efficient to put it into a paper towel, see which ones crack open, and then plant those ones versus planting 100 different seeds into grow pots and then finding out which ones pop and which ones don't. So, like, I thought that was a really good, efficient tip that I heard from somebody when talking about just planting in the soil and saving time and so on and so forth. Somebody replied and they're like, no, not for me. I plant 100 seeds at a time, and paper towel is much more efficient for me. So I thought that was a great point to bring up, since we are talking about efficiency here, is the paper towel method can be more efficient if you're growing a large number of seeds. Then you'll see which ones are good, which ones are not, and you're not wasting time there. So,
yep.
Now, how about mixing soil? You talked about you're growing organic. What's in your soil mix, and how do you go about the mixing process?
Well, I never really grow an organic for for medicinal plants. I mean, I've tried it once with I heard a lot of good things with what's the name of that company? Coastal Maine. Coastal Maine is supposed to have really good super soil. And the one time I really wanted to try it, I got a really bad bag. So many bugs in it. It was horrible. Horrible experience with it. But as far as the garden goes, when we built the bed for the garden, we just used bone meal, blood meal, alfalfa meal. We had kelp meal. We actually used European night crawlers instead of using worm castings. Vermiculite, perlite, mix it all together. You know, you throw it in the bed. Let the bed cook, because you know all that stuff you put in there is really hot. So we let the bed cook for like maybe 2-3 weeks before we actually put plants in it. And that's how we went about building our soil.
And then you said for container size, you're starting out in solo cups, have those in there for about 3 weeks. Then you're transitioning, you're doing one transplant, correct me if I'm wrong, to your final container, which is 1 or 2 gallon containers. Then the question I had was using organic in such a small pot, but you just corrected me that you're actually using bottled nutrients or mineral-based nutrients. What brand are you using?
Man, I mean, I'm kind of all over the place, to be honest. I've tried almost everything on the market. I'm just like everyone else. When you first start off, you see so many different things. You're like, oh, I got to try all this. I'm going to buy this one first and buy this one next. But over the past couple of years, I've dibbled and dabbled with raw salts. I like the raw salts a little bit. But my last grower actually used Canna. I like Canna too. Canna has really good nutrients. I used the Terra blend. It's called Terra Vega blend. It's pretty good line.
And then how do you go about the transplanting process? I mean, you've got so many plants. You can really spend a lot of time transplanting, or there are things you can do to make things more efficient. How do you do the transplanting process and keep things efficient?
Man, I mean, that's a hard one because I don't think there's any really efficient way to get, you know, 300 plants in a pot. I mean, then other than just lining them up, dumping the soil, and trying to transplant them as quick as possible and get them under the lights. That's how we usually did it. You know, we just line them up, dump it in. We would build the hole, make the hole for the new transplant. We use some mycorrhizae, but, you know, put a little something in there for the soil, for the roots to be happy, other than just dirt. And that was the most efficient way. I mean, you're not doing it by yourself, of course, but, like, you know, maybe two guys, three guys, and just kind of have a nice chain going down the line and getting them all potted up and put into their new home.
Pretty straightforward there. So you've done your transplant, you're in your final container, which is 1 or 2 gallon. When does your first feeding happen, and what does that consist of?
My first feeding, well, it really depends on what medium we're using, or what medium am I using. I mean, I've tried different styles of growing. I've tried DWC. You know, I really like DWC. Very efficient, super fast. Plant grows probably twice the rate when it's just constantly eating water all day and food all day. Less maintenance. It's definitely less maintenance when you grow DWC style. CocoCore, that's kind of time consuming as well. Sometimes you got to charge the bricks. If the bricks aren't charged, you got to charge them up, or you got to inflate them because they'll come all like compressed together. So you got to get them uncompressed. But on the larger scale, we kind of went toward the other ones, towards the mesh bag that already kind of had the hole in it for your rock wool cube. And that kind of made things really quicker and efficient because you're not, you know, putting a bunch of stuff and putting a bunch of soil or stuff in a pot. The hole's there. So all we're doing is taking the clone from the clone dome and dumping it right into the new hole. And that made things really efficient for us when it's time to transplant the clones.
Okay, and then as far as feedings, were you using raw or were you using canna at that point?
So my first feeding is probably, it's tough because I use Fox Farm sometimes, and we know Fox Farm runs pretty hot. So if I'm using the Ocean Forest, I probably won't feed for a couple of weeks. But if you use the Happy Frog, you can probably start feeding your first feed probably 2 weeks in, 2.5 weeks in. It'll be on the lighter side. I'll probably do something like a 1.0 EC, something that's really light, and pH it around 6.2 to 6.1 if I'm in soil. If I'm in cocoa, it might be more around 5.9 to 6.0.
Okay, and then for 300 plants, I mean, what size of container are you mixing that in? I mean, are you in a large reservoir? Do you have a automated system? Drip system, or like, how does that work out?
Yeah, that would be on definitely irrigation, fertigation for all those plants. Staking everything, having each pot probably get 2 stakes each. Set up the tables, but get the emitters in, drippers. That's how we would go about that.
And then it's just hooked up to a reservoir and it's just dripping down on that throughout the grow cycle. And what is it, like once a week or something, you're changing up the ratio of nutrients in the reservoir or what?
Yeah. So we would change up the recipe, not the recipe. We would change up the feeding. So we like to probably do like some micro feeding. I know micro feeding is pretty big in the commercial field. So they would do a lot of micro feeding when I was there. We probably water 3 to 4 times a day. I think we kind of like switched up the EC. I think it would be heavier in the morning, and then toward the end of the day, we kind of give it on the lighter side just so we get that balance in the medium so we don't get any type of like nutrient burn or anything.
Got it. Okay. So switching things up a little bit, let's get into lighting. Now, you've worked in indoor operations. I'm looking at your Instagram right now, and there's just tons of lights stacked down the entire way. Do you have any tips for lighting, such as like grow light distance or dimming or PAR, things like that?
I've had my share of plenty of lights. There's like so many. I actually think I like T5s a lot in the beginning because they're just so fluorescent, a little less intensity for the plants, and they just love it. Like you can actually have the plants like kissing the lights and it will do no harm to them. You know, the PAR on those are usually between 200 and 300, which is nothing. Of course, in veg, you want to be a little stronger. because you want the, in veg, you kind of want the blue. So the blue is anywhere between 400 and 500 micromoles. Vet and in flower, you want to be a little higher, maybe in between 600 and 700. And if you're having any type of like, if your plants are starting to stretch a little too much on your tables and you're not liking the stretch, you know, you can always lower your lights and that will help stop the stretch. And if your plants are too squat and you kind of want them to, you know, stretch a little more, then you, you know, raise your lights up a little bit, probably between 18 and 20 inches just to get them to stretch up a little more. And another big thing is environment with the temperature. I know that if you have a huge swing difference between your daytime light and your nighttime temperatures, I know that also causes a little bit of stretch. So if you can really get your environment dialed in to where the temperature kind of stays the same it is during the day when the light's on, that would also avoid your plants from stretching if you're not looking to get them too tall.
So what temperature do you typically aim for?
I typically aim for in between 80 and 84. Like right now, I run an LED, and the temperature kind of stays consistent around 84. Right now, in the winter, right now it's wintertime, so in the wintertime here, it's tough because there's really no no humidity. So the way I have it set up right now in my tent is I actually leave the back vent open, and I leave one of the side vents open, and I kind of put a fan on the outside of the tent that kind of blows air through the side vent, and then I have a fan also clipped to the pole for circulation, and then my temperature kind of stays really steady between 84 for temperature, and my humidity is always low because it's just so dry here. I mean, in the wintertime, humidity here is probably 20, lucky to be 25 or 30%. So I do use a humidifier in veg, so I try to get it up to at least 45 in veg. I mean, it's better in the summertime here because the humidity is a little high. It might be at 45 or 50 during the day, which is good. And I also have central heat where I live right now, so it kind of helps keep my temperatures consistent and steady where it's at because I can use the central heat. But I don't have central air, so I use the AC unit for the window, and that really helps me keep my temperatures dialed in having the AC in there. And And when the lights are on, you know, it's 84 in the winter, but in the summertime when I have the lights on, it's probably in between 80 and 81. That's as high as it'll get. And as far as when the light's off, my temperatures usually drop like maybe 8 or 9 degrees on the swing. Yeah, my humidity in the summertime is it stays kind of consistent around that 50 range just because outdoors it's kind of hot. But in the winter, that's when it gets real rough around here. You know, you have to use a humidifier to keep it up. But my temperatures stay in between there. I mean, they're never really higher than, you know, 84 with the LED that I run right now.
Okay. And then what about CO2? Are you adding CO2 into the grow space in order to try to get better growth?
I've actually tried CO2. When I first started, I was actually making my own CO2, just getting a regular little like Coke bottle, soda bottle, and then, you know, using yeast and sugar, and then letting it do its thing, letting it cook its thing in the tent. And then, you know, I started buying the exhale bags. I tried the canisters. I tried the CO2 Pros. They all seem to do pretty well. Right now, I don't really use it because I have a monitor, and usually the CO2 in my house already is around 600 ppm, which is not bad. So I don't really try to supplement more CO2 if I don't need to. I mean, I get pretty good yields right now. So, but I do dibble and dabble with it if necessary. I've tried it, and they work. You know, they're very efficient. I mean, I can see the difference on the end result when it's all said and done.
It can definitely be helpful, you know, especially if you are running a little bit higher of temps, you know, which you kind of are with the 84 degree Fahrenheit. Having that additional CO2 can help. And of course, having the high lighting can also help with growth for sure. Let's get into training plants. Man, I can only imagine 300 plants and having to train all of them. Now, I've talked with other folks that worked in cultivation facilities in the past, and they avoid some parts of training because it takes so long. Talk to us about how you do plant training when you're working in these facilities, or when you worked in these facilities, you say. Was there a certain type of training you would do for all the plants? Were there training that you would avoid to do because they're so time consuming? Or what would you typically do for that?
Yeah, we typically try to avoid to do any type of low stress training. It would just take too long for the plant to recover or get to where we want it to be. I mean, when you're in a commercial field, everything's on a timeline. Everything feels kind of rushed. So there's really no time to do anything extra. So we didn't really do too much training or trying to low stress train anything. But we did do, we did a whole lot of fem topping. And that was like one of the main things we did a lot. We never really did any topping, like regular topping, like cutting branches or anything, because we just didn't want to do that unless we were taking clones off the moms. But yeah, we did a lot of fem topping to get more tops and more shoots. And when we put them in the flower, you know, we put up the trellis up. We'll put them through the trellis, and then you know, we would actually remove any branches that were kind of crisscrossing across the table, hitting other plants and stuff like that. That's about as far as we got with going with training. We just didn't want too much stuff touching each other, you know, try to avoid getting powdery mildew. We want to have good airflow. We don't want to have no drips showing up. So we would cut off any branches that were crisscrossing with each other or just didn't fit well in the trellis on the bench.
Now, would you limit the topping or fimming, actually, you mentioned, would you limit that to once per grow cycle only in the veg, or were you fimming a plant multiple times in veg? And I assume you avoid doing that in flower?
Yeah, we avoid it in flower. We would actually probably fem top twice. We'll fem top early in veg, maybe a couple of weeks in, and then we do it again right before we send them over to the flower room. We'll do it again just to get some additional toppage going. And in the end, it worked out. You know, we end up, you know, you go in there with just maybe, you know, 8 tops. You know, we do a fem before going there, and then we'll have 16 tops, you know.
Smart going after the fem in a commercial operation. You know, not only does it help promote that bottom growth, those branches growing up, but you're getting more than just a couple tops coming. You know, fimming, it could be 3 or 4 tops coming from that one fem area. So it makes sense that that's used in a commercial operation. And quite frankly, I feel like people should use it more in home grow operations as well. I personally feel like I should use it more. In the fimming is easier said than done. You know, you got to get it in the right spot. I've tried to fim so many times and it just didn't work. And then I've topped a plant before and accidentally turned into a fim. So it definitely takes a little bit of practice getting that perfect spot to where it's actually going to fim and go into 4 different tops versus just 2. But yeah, good tip for training there and making things more efficient. Now, pruning plants, you talked about how you would remove branches that were kind of overlapping with other plants. That's one form of pruning. What about like lollipopping, to where you're removing the lower third or lower quarter growth of the plant? Would you do that at all? Also, I want to loop in defoliation, so removing leaves. Would you do that at all?
Yes, that's very important. So when we do this, so actually when we put up the trellis, the first trellis that actually goes up, that's kind of like the baseline for the plant. So wherever that trellis lands on the table, anything below that first trellis baseline is going to be stripped off. So we can transfer all that energy right to the top of the plant, you know, get really good colas and vigorous growth from the top of the plant up. And then once that started to take off, you know, you put your second trellis on to support that. And yeah, that's how we did it. We do it like that. And we would defoliate. We defoliate all through the whole plant cycle. I mean, I always tell people, you know, I always ask people, do you like haircuts? And they'll be like, yes. Well, I'm like, well, these plants love haircuts. So it's always good to give the plant a haircut. Because I know some folks get a little worried about taking off so many fan leaves. They're like, oh, no, I can't do that. But they don't realize that, you know, you're going to take all these leaves off today, and it's going to be fully back to what it was 7 days later, like you did nothing. And then they were like, oh, no, you was right. No, I was like, yeah, I mean, these plants just love haircuts. I don't know. They just love them. And we would defoliate all cycle. During flower, we would actually defoliate and do the pruning or the lollipopping before they go in. And then we would do it again maybe 20, 25 days later. We'd go in and do another heavy strip, and then just kind of let it ride out from there until harvest. And then we may take a little more fan leaves off before harvest, but we like to keep as many leaves on as possible toward the end of flower.
Okay, so that's flower. And then question for when you're in veg, you mentioned stripping things down. Were you doing that every single day, or were you like limiting to every 3 days, every 5 days or whatever?
I would say we were doing maybe every couple of weeks. I mean, sometimes we would just pick off leaves just to pick off leaves. If we think it was no taking up too much light, blocking the lowers, we just pull off one leaf. But now we would wait, you know, maybe a week or two, and then we go in there, hit it hard, you know, it'd grow back, plant would be much bigger. We go in there, hit it again, it'd get much bigger, and then sooner or later we're gonna have to move it to flower, and that's when we really give it, you know, the full haircut that we want to give it, or it takes off and flower.
Got it. Any tips for the flowering stage to kind of make things more efficient there?
Definitely use the trellis. Put your trellis up. Keep the room clean. When you have a clean environment, make sure you have proper airflow. I know a lot of people like to chase BPD. That's a really big thing in the industry. I'm not really a fan of it. I think it's very dangerous playing with that. It's a dangerous game, but if you have it down pat, no, hats off to you. I just know, I mean, that's one of the things we did a lot there. We did chase the VPD where I worked. It was okay. I know it causes a little problem. You just got to make sure you have the proper airflow. You don't want to get powdery mildew. You don't want to get any pests showing up. And that's really the main reason. You got to be really careful when you're playing with the VPD.
I know a lot of people just will ignore VPD because of that. You know, some...
That's me.
Yeah, running a higher humidity, which is what most of these VPD charts call for. And unfortunately, there are several different VPD charts on the internet today, and they contradict with each other. And that makes things so confusing for people. But generally speaking, it usually calls for a higher humidity in the flowering stage, where if you're running a higher humidity and you don't have good airflow, for example, you get bud rot. I've had that. I've come across that before, unfortunately. Not good at all to be in flower, and all of a sudden you spot bud rot happening. You got to chop off colas and get rid of them, or even powdery mildew. You know, that's another thing. And of course, one of the root causes is stagnant air, so having the good airflow. But yeah, I know a lot of people just ignore VPD because of that. They'll, no matter what, even though if it calls for above 60% RH in flower, they'll still keep it lower than that because they don't even want to risk getting any sort of powdery mildew or any sort of bud rot. So now let's move on to harvesting. Another thing where it's like, you know, when we're talking about large scale, 300 plants, harvesting that, it's got to be very time consuming. Chopping down plants, moving them around, getting them from the flower room to the dry room. Talk to us about harvesting, how you go about making things efficient there.
Oh, you just got to have a lot of people on hands. That day, we got to have everybody in the building, all hands on deck for that. It's just a constant train of chopping, passing it down the line, tagging it, putting it on the dolly, taking it down to the dry room, hanging it. And, you know, we can take down maybe a 300 plant room in probably an hour and a half tops, you know, get everything down and hung up in the other room, weighed, get the wet weight, weigh it. I mean, that's the only way I think that you can really be efficient is just have everybody all hands on deck that day, because it's going to be a long day without having a lot of hands.
And that's similar for a lot of home grow operations as well. I mean, when I was running 12 large plants, and I'm maxed out here at 12 plants, so I'm a small home grower. That's all I can grow in my state is 12 plants. I can't go above that legally. But I usually call up all my friends, hey, come on over, we're harvesting, or even trimming, you know, all hands on deck for trimming, because that's very time-consuming process. Now they have bowl trimmer now and a bunch of machine trimming now, which makes things a lot more efficient, but all hands on deck back in the day when we were just using hand trimmers the entire time. So I can totally relate to that on a home grow standpoint.
I'm actually going to circle back, because we actually tried a couple of different things when we harvest them before. I mean, one time we tried actually harvesting individual branches, and that was just like, oof. And I mean, it works, but that definitely takes up a lot of time. We kind of figured, you know, chopping down the whole plant at the base made things a lot easier. Just hang the whole plant, space it out perfectly. And, you know, that saved us a whole lot of time, just chopping the whole plant and then rather than doing the individual branches.
Yeah, great point. Now, I assume you're taking all those into a specific room for drying. What's your drying conditions, temperature, and humidity?
You know, I think that's really preference for a lot of people. I know everyone has their preference where they think the sweet spot is. On the commercial side, you know, they used to play around with it quite a bit. You know, I've seen them run 60% temperature 45% humidity. Sometimes they'll put it at 55, 50. They like to kind of like fluctuate a little bit. I mean, like, they'll go 3 days at 60, 60. Then the next 3 days, they'll drop it down to like 55, 45. Just trying to like super dry it, but then give it back moisture a little bit, but then take it away again, then give it back to it a little bit. But you really want to get that real slow dry. You know, you don't want to be chopping down too early and flash dry anything, because then you just wasted the whole, however long it took you to grow that cycle, you're going to ruin it because you flash dried it. So they played around with it quite a bit. My personal preference, you know, my last harvest I just took down, I actually ran 65, 62, and it worked out pretty well for me.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I was going to ask you what your personal preference was. So what about like length of dry? How long do you like to dry for, a number of days?
I like the really slow dry. I'm going 14, maybe 17 days if I can. But if not, then, you know, I'll pull it before it gets too dry. Like, I know we're supposed to, I know, you know, the grow bros always say, you know, you want to wait till it gets to that point where, you know, the branches are snapping. I think that might be a little too long of a dry, because now everything is going to be kind of crunchy. So I kind of wait for the stems to be a little bendy to where they might snap, but they're not going to snap. And I think that's kind of the perfect time to, I know, take it down, chop it, and trim it.
Understood. And then after drying comes curing. How do you go about that?
I like turkey bags, man. I don't know about anybody else. I mean, I'm like old school with it. I like turkey bags. I know there's a lot of things on the market these days, you know, sea vaults. My buddy just gave me these new bags. I don't even know what they call. He's like, yeah, man, this thing preserves everything. And I'm just like, man, just go get some turkey bags, dude. You're wasting your money on these bags. I mean, turkey bags work well, man. You know, you get your turkey bag, you get your thermometer. Did I say that right? I think I did. You know, the thing that monitors what's going on inside the outside the bag as far as humidity. You know, I try to keep when my bud's actually curing, I try to keep it between like 55 and 60 on the inside. And if it goes below that or above it, you know, I kind of just crack it and off gas it and kind of do a hard reset, and hopefully it goes back to where I want it. And on a larger scale, I mean, when I was in the commercial field, they didn't really do any of that turkey bag stuff. They just used they just line up these totes with plastic. You know, put them in there and then close the plastic lids and kind of just waited it out and just kept everything in the dry room. I mean, the dry room was cold, so they just kept everything in there and keep everything in a dark, cool environment.
That's good storage conditions as well. Now, were they opening up the bins to burp them on a daily basis, or what was the process for that?
Yeah, we were burping those at least once a day. You know, smelt amazing too. But yeah, we'd burp them once a day, try to off gas them. We'd do that for probably a week, 2 weeks. And then after that, we just kind of keep it shut, you know, let the nuggets do its thing, you know. You know, we're going in, maybe occasionally burp it.
And then after that, it goes off to packaging and then off to the store, and then people buy it, right?
Yeah.
Nice, nice. So yeah, we just went from seed all the way through harvest, drying, and curing, trimming. We didn't talk about that. Any tips for trimming, making that more efficient?
Well, the way to make trimmer more efficient, honestly, is make sure you don't have any popcorn buds. Make sure you have all nice big colas. You know, that makes trimming a lot easier. I mean, trim machines are good. I know they do knock off a lot of trichomes, but some of them are pretty good. I know people like the wet trim. Wet trim is not bad. I've done some wet trimming, and then we just hang it up in the net and let it dry. But yeah, I would say just, you know, try to avoid popcorn nugs. The bigger you can get your nuggets and your colas, you know, it'd be easier on the back end when it's time to trim it, you know, and get it out to the shelves.
Seems to be pretty split between people who prefer wet trim or dry trim. 50-50, really. I mean, all the people I talked to over the years, it's one or the other, and they're hardcore on their stance there. I personally like the dry trim. And I do the same thing with you. We're talking about like Larfy buds or the popcorn buds. Those actually nowadays just end up in my trim pile, to where I'm using that for edibles, really, for oil, butter, and then making edibles. So yeah, I've gotten less and less picky about trimming up Larf or popcorn buds. It just goes in my trim pile, and then I just keep the top nuggets. So yeah. So do you have any other tips just overall for making things more efficient throughout any part of the growth cycle that we didn't cover yet?
Just be patient, man. Gardening and growing in general is just patience. When you're on the commercial side, you can feel kind of rushed, or things feel kind of rushed. But just be patient. I mean, everything's not going to be perfect. Take your time. Do what you can do. Patience is key, man. Gardening's supposed to be relaxing, so just be patient with everything you're doing. You're going to make mistakes, so nothing's going to be perfect.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think there's a big difference between being efficient and cutting corners. You know, and cutting corners, that's what's going to potentially get you into hot water, right? If you're doing things where you really shouldn't be doing it, you're doing it only to save time, but you're risking quality. So yeah, big difference between being efficient and cutting corners. All right, so let's wrap things up. Tell us how the listeners can find you, and do you have anything upcoming in the future that you want to talk about?
You can find me on Instagram at Doobie's House. If you got questions about gardening or need help with something, feel free to reach out. I respond and reply to everybody. Always willing to help any and everybody. As far as coming up, I would really like to expand my consulting services a little better. Maybe try to get in more commercial side of it. Maybe start some environmental monitoring as far as going in with petri dishes, some sponges, and an ATP meter, just trying to help people out with figure out if they have any mold or yeast and mold and other bacteria flying around their grow rooms and stuff. And scrubbing down surfaces, checking the trim machine, other machinery they might use that may carry yeast and mold or other bacteria. So I'm looking forward to trying to expand my services into doing that. As far as coming up, that's about everything I got coming up was that.
Awesome. Well, I'll definitely have a link to your Instagram down in the YouTube description section below at Doobie's House. Walter, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate it. This has been awesome to be able to listen to how you do things in the commercial facility, as well as you also gave us insight on your home growing. So it's great to have that vast amount of experience. And then hearing about the efficiency side of things, which is something we really haven't covered much on this podcast. So thanks for giving us your insight, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.